Blog Talk Radio.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me, oh my, oh. Me gotta go. Pull the P-Row down the bayou. My Yvonne, the sweetest one. Me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big.
And every moment of every day, you're 17 trillion. And the question is, are you contributing towards healthy cellular regeneration? Or are you conducting a lifestyle or eating in a way that's going to damage your DNA and cause premature cellular death? And this is Dr. Millie, and I want to welcome you to the show. This is Eating for Meaning. On this program, we talk about the four principles of eating for meaning, which are that nutrition is the most important aspect of eating. Food is medicine, but if not, then it could also be your poison. And how do we discover what food is right for us? It involves paying attention to our body's symptoms and how our body's responding to food. And this is what we learn on this show. The second principle of eating for meaning is adventure, to find joy and variety in your food so that you're eating and sharing that food, preparing it at home, and scouring the universe for other ways to feed yourself and having fun with that. Third is mindfulness. So that's the part about paying attention to the response that your body has to the food that you're eating, but also being mindful of the role that your food has in the ecosystem and in the environment. And lastly is the principle of epigenetics. And epigenetics means that it's not just a matter of what DNA or what genes or what disease predispositions you're born with. Our genes change based on the environment that we live in, the thoughts that we think, the behaviors that we conduct, and the food that we eat. There's even a subspecialty of the field of epigenetics called nutrigenomics, which means by including certain nutrients into your diet, you can turn off your genetic expression away from cancer and towards youth. And so we all want to be younger longer, and if we're going to live longer, then we want to do that healthy. And so today I've got a very special guest. His name is James Ray. He is a vegan chef in Manhattan, and today we're going to be interviewing James about his health and how he came across the inspiration to become a chef and his inspirations, and he's got some really intuitive answers for us, I know. And welcome, James. Are you here with me?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
All right. So James and I are conducting this show. We are in the same room. We are live from Mountain at 903 Franklin in Brooklyn, and we are both on our cell phones. So hopefully this is going to work out.
It's a very modern interview.
It is. And so, James, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show. We just met on the weekend, actually, and so we put this show together pretty quickly. I really felt connected to you when I met you at an astrology brunch, actually, for which you cooked. You made an amazing chia parfait. And so it was on that day that we decided we were going to do some work together. So I'm really happy to meet you and to have you on the show. It really means a lot to me.
Yes, I felt the same way. It's nice meeting you. And as things like astrology brunches do, they tend to bring people together.
Absolutely. And so we have a mutual friend, Monty Taylor, who is talking about myths and archetypes and what astrology is on a greater universal level. And so maybe it was also fortuitous that we meet at that event. I'm a Pisces. What sign are you?
Well, I just had my 33rd birthday on February 10th, so I'm Aquarius.
Okay. So my mom's an Aquarius. And so you are a chef. I titled this show The Chef That Heals Himself. And we've been getting acquainted before the show, and I asked you about your what your health conditions were throughout your life that brought you to this point. And can you tell the audience about that?
Well, I like that you call me the chef who healed myself. But, you know, healing is a lifelong process, or perhaps longer than that goes. But the conditions that I experienced mostly had to do with digestion. I had been diagnosed very early with ulcers, developing IBS, acid reflux. What, if untreated, I really believe could have been diagnosed as Crohn's disease, or, you know, I don't know what they would have done if had I not taken the route that I took. But it also led to depression, diagnosed with ADHD. I basically just didn't feel very good.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a long haul, which a lot of kids do, actually. Those are symptoms that a lot of kids have. They have cholesterol in their early years, and oftentimes the medical system doesn't put that together, or doctors don't, and the individual certainly don't, but that can also lead to problems lifelong.
I would say that the best example of how I was kind of, I don't want to say misdiagnosed, but symptoms were being treated, is the fact that I had chronic sinusitis and bronchitis and strep throat. The doctors looking at this would say, oh, we need to treat that. Let's heal the infected area, the wounded area. And I didn't know at this at 11, 12 years old. But now what I realize is the reflux that was occurring from the fact that my body was attempting to overproduce stomach acid because it was low in enzymes to digest food, it caused the acid to come upward, and when I was lying down and sleeping, it was going into my lungs, causing damage which led to the bronchitis, and it was also coming up into my sinuses and kind of destroying my mucous membranes and also my throat. So while I was being treated with sometimes antibiotics, or something, I don't even know what they give you for strep throat or sinusitis, whatever pill I was taking, was just treating that. And actually, it was making my digestion worse because of the irritation I was already experiencing in my GI tract. So it was really causing everything to be worse, but I thought, as a kid, I was doing the right thing and fixing the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is so common that if you have irritation, if you're eating the wrong foods for you, if you're eating milk every day, for instance, and you have food sensitivity or you're lactose intolerant, then the inflammation gets generated and our body has to produce more enzymes in order to break down that food. And unfortunately, and obviously somewhat ironically, is that the medical treatment for that acid that comes up, which is really just a stress response to eating an improper diet, is to buffer that acid with antacids, Prozac, Zantac, all of these. And then we end up in a situation where we're at our true deficit, where we don't have enough enzymes because they're being suppressed. And then, of course, the body works together. So if you're getting mucus generated from inflammation and your digestive system is going up to your throat, it can irritate your throat, and then it causes this whole symptom of sinusitis, allergies. And that's a good teaching example for how the body is connected and why if a person only goes to a GI doctor, then they still might be missing half of the problem because they obviously have all these other sinus issues as well. So how did you figure that out, and what did you do if you're not getting help?
Well, a lot of situations in life, we kind of find the answers kind of at our bottom. You know, we reach like rock bottom. And I had been sad, I mean, from as early as I can remember, my body was literally depressed. It didn't have what it needed to be at, even like a moderate space of happiness, and it couldn't regenerate itself. And I just realized at some point around, it was the age of 19, something has to give. Maybe it's diet. I don't know. I didn't have any literature around me. I didn't have a role model that said, hey, try eating more vegetables. Maybe that'll work. My family ate the way they ate. And I there are millions of people, especially in our country, who eat this way, and I don't judge that. But what I realized is I felt like crap. And I just kind of decided I'll try the diet thing. The first thing I did was I removed red meat because it seemed there was some sort of popular idea that it wasn't good for you. I didn't agree with it at the time, but that started a cavalcade of changes, which led to about 8 years later me being a complete raw foodist, having moved from Baltimore, where I grew up, living in New York City, and I realized I'd gone maybe a little too far with the changes, and since then I found balance, but that's kind of how it started. Like, I had nothing. I knew that I couldn't live the way I was living. I felt awful.
And oftentimes, I think people do get to the point where it's the last straw, the camel's going to break, and they don't know what else to do. Even my patients, they come to me being like, I've tried everything. This is the last hope that we turn over to this natural thing. Maybe it's the diet thing, that maybe that there's something that's less high tech or less drug based that can actually help me. And so, but also I like that you point out the fact that it is such a learning experience, and that there's an intuitive process in it, or a trial and error, because our bodies, even though they are biochemical and they do respond to the environment, there's no perfect answer. There's no one-fits-one-all answer, and it's really our own individual, self that we have to find the answers for. So you can't necessarily turn to all the textbooks out there and learn what that is. You have to go through the process yourself. And that's difficult, but good job.
Well, thank you. I feel like, I mean, hindsight is 20/20, and through the work that I've done, I now see things in kind of a different way. But I know that my body was just calling to me and saying, do something different. Or it had information for me. It had gifts to share. I mean, look at what I do now, you know, cooking for people and helping them when they have these types of feelings and they have these types of blockages. Without my own path, I wouldn't have any idea where to start. And you can feed someone maybe one meal and they'll feel better, but when you really see that it's their body speaking to you through these symptoms, you can hold space for that. You can provide appropriate food that fits that calling. You know this in what you do. And that's a really beautiful thing to be able to do. And I feel like I have a message that I've not only shared with my mother and father just to start, but with partners and friends throughout my life and clients. And it's a beautiful thing. I feel like it's an even bigger message that I'm happy to share with anyone who's listening, because with the entire world if they're listening.
And so not only are you the chef who healed himself, but you're the chef who's healing others.
I don't see how it could work any other way.
And so, okay, so let's go back a little bit, because I do want to know your entire journey. As much as you have the energy to discuss. And so you mentioned that you cut out red meat, and you talked about nutrient density. And so before the break, or before we came on the show, also we were talking about how eating is not actually calories, how many calories that the body needs, it's actually more nutrients. And here in America, we know we have the other example, the other side. We eat too many calories and not enough nutrients. And the fact that there's just not enough nutrients in the food that we eat drives our motivation, our biochemical, physiological motivation for cravings and to eat more calories, because we just can't satisfy ourselves on the nutritional level. These nutrients are doing things in our body. They're creating our neurotransmitters. They're creating our serotonin, the chemicals that we need to feel happy and balanced and to go to sleep, and also to regenerate ourselves and to regenerate our body. And you mentioned that you really felt that your body wasn't able to do that as well. So you eliminated red meat first, and then what?
Well, first, that because it was the first thing, and anyone who's lived a life of eating meat at every meal knows that this is pretty challenging. So that one took a while. But after about 8 months of like flipping back and forth, I really stuck with it. And from there, I noticed that I was a little bit lighter. I just had a little bit more free energy. I am someone, you can hear it in the way I say energy, I am someone who's more sensitive to my body, so I doubt everyone would feel it this much, but luckily I am. And the next thing that I removed was dairy. I had had an intuitive feeling throughout my life that there was something very charged about what specifically drinking milk and eating cheese did to me. And I got to say, there was no challenge. Most people find removing dairy very challenging. I had no challenge. Within a week, I felt amazing. My breathing was clear. I was able to run for extended periods of time without feeling like my lungs were filling with some sort of, basically there was a lot of mucus. I was having an internal reaction to dairy, I would guess, lactose intolerance or even a dairy allergy. I haven't, it's ended up in some of my foods since then. That was about 14 years ago, but really that one was great for me.
And so it's a real motivation factor when people go through the process of removing these foods that they think comprise a staple of their diet, but the benefit of it is obvious, and it comes around quickly. Like as soon as you remove foods, you mentioned within days of removing foods the body's reacting to, your entire symptomology can resolve, and therefore the motivation is then actually feeling better. And what I find in my practice is that people go from feeling generally bad all the time, having no energy, maybe not being able to sleep, having mood disorders or mood problems, and some digestive problems or chronic allergies. And then as soon as they kind of discover the food that they can't eat, then half of those symptoms disappear relatively quickly, and you don't have to go through it one by one and say, oh, okay, how am I going to deal with the sinuses? How am I going to deal with the digestion? How am I going to deal with the depression? Because our body is all one being. It's functioning together. And you seem to have a real intuitive understanding of that just by listening to you talk.
What I really use as a barometer is the amount of, maybe I can find a better term for this, but the amount of energy that I put towards a certain food. Some people can say, I'm obsessed with, you know, this, or I can't go without this thing. I really think that's a sign. I mean, first of all, it's a sign you like something so often. If you can keep it and it doesn't affect you negatively, that's a good thing. But it's something to be looked into, because there's an attachment that the body has. It's some sort of, perhaps not an addiction, but at the very least a compulsion. And the amount of energy that's between you and that food is trying to, the same way my symptoms were trying to talk to me, I think is really trying to tell you something. Like for instance, I was taught that if you kind of want to figure out if someone's more allergic to gluten or dairy, you would ask them at a birthday party, would you eat the ice cream or the cake? If they say both, you have to do whatever you can. But, you know, they say ice cream, like look into dairy. If they say cake, look into gluten.
Yeah. And so there's kind of funny duality between the having the intuition to know what your body needs. So if we look at children and how children's response to food is, they're more connected to their environment. They evolved, they haven't figured out as many barriers to rely on, et cetera. And so sometimes parents will notice that their kids really eat a lot of greens. And so the interpretation is that they eat a lot of greens, and so therefore they're nutrient deficient or they're craving what they need. But then the other side of it is that that's not the only way that people crave is what they need. They also crave what they're kind of addicted to. I mean, Dr. Mark Hine is a functional medicine doctor. He did a study that showed that actually sugar is more addictive than cocaine. And so it really does have a biological effect or biochemical effect on the brain. And so I love would you eat the birthday cake or would you eat the ice cream as a way to understand? Because we really do crave and think about all the time. If you have,
if there is a food that is not good for you, it's likely the food that you're eating the most often, the food that you crave the most, the food that you have the most attachment to and that you would really hate to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's a very good teaching point. That's a very good point. And so do you use gluten in your cooking?
No, well, that was kind of the last thing. I think gluten was the last piece that I took out maybe four years ago. In my cooking for clients, I do basically allergen-free. I don't know soy. Well, I use certain fermented soy products, miso, tamari, which is gluten-free soy sauce, and tempeh. There are also now some sprouted soybean tofus that I find are much easier on digestion. But in general, a lot of soy just has a very strong growth potential. It's not kind of reined in. It just causes things to grow. And I don't generally want to be feeding people that. So soy-free, dairy-free, gluten-free. And I will do nut-free if needed, but nuts are fun, especially when they're organic.
Okay, so you do tailor it to your, in terms of your clients, you tailor it to whatever their food sensitivities are, or do you devise a plan for them, like a healing plan?
It is very individual, but if they are looking for someone to devise it for them, I'm very happy to do that, and I will take some information from them and use my intuitive abilities also. But if they have their own, they are paying me for the service, if they have things that they want and it really feels off, I'll recommend that they don't have it, but I'm not going to tell them no. You know, food isn't everything. It's a very important thing, but if someone wants to get pleasure, more pleasure from food, then I'm not here to tell them no. I do that myself.
Okay, and so we are speaking with vegan chef James Ray. He's a Manhattan and Brooklyn-based chef. And as I understand, he travels all over the United States and cooks for people for various events. And this is Eating for Meaning. You're listening live. And we'll be back after the break.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back. This is Dr. Millie. I'm the host of Eating for Meaning, and I am live today with vegan chef James Ray. He is the chef who healed himself, and so we're talking today all about his journey, his process of understanding his own body reaction to food, being a child who was fairly, although I would say within a normal spectrum of ill, but fairly ill, and he's a person who really decided to do something about it. And the other thing that really struck me, James, when we were speaking before the show was, and I don't want to, you know, feel free to just discuss whatever aspect you'd like, of course, but was how you incorporated your family dynamics and your emotional reactions and your physical reaction to your overall wellness. Because to me, that just speaks that you're such an intuitively holistic person. And what do you have to say about that?
Well, there was I grew up in just outside of downtown Baltimore, in kind of a working class environment where there was a lot of stress. There was it never really felt grounded, and it didn't necessarily feel safe, as any of you who are familiar with Baltimore City, you know, about 25 years ago would understand. And this led to, as a kid, me really not feeling very safe and being very aware all the time, a constant state of hyper-attentiveness. And I was in a very feeling family who just, they were just trying to, it felt like my parents were just trying to kind of get through things. Like it was a constant struggle. And all of these emotions I was very aware of, they didn't really have the time to sit down and process. As a kid, I did. It's kind of all I did. I thought about these things and I internalized a lot of them, and I felt responsible and wondered how I could fix these things. And that really caused me to form a really strong emotional eating habit, which I was not only learning from that pattern, but also it was very common in my family as well. And so whatever type of energy I was bringing in through these highly processed and I would say downright questionable food substances I was ingesting, I was not only putting more of them into my body, but I was compacting kind of this emotional negativity into my body. I was building it into my cells.
Yeah, and when we talk about epigenetics, this is a perfect example of that, because if we kind of eat mindlessly to fill some kind of void, whether it's boredom or time or stress, or and even as a child, you're doing it in order to escape or doing it to soothe yourself. I mean, we learn very on as babies to soothe ourselves, and nourishment or at the breast or at the bottle is obviously a way that we soothe ourselves. And then growing up, as we are supposed to adopt detachment and other coping mechanisms and different attachments, but if something hardwired within the family environment and we're relearning or we're continuing or perpetuating those same kind of negative associations, that stays with people forever. And that can be passed on from one family member to the next generation and really be built into our DNA, really be built into our genes. And just by breaking that cycle, by becoming aware of that pattern for yourself, you are actually changing your own DNA so that if you end up having children, you're less likely to pass that on to your offspring. And so I find that so fascinating. I love that you put it like that. You're so intuitive.
Well, thank you. I can tell you, actually, my mother was visiting when we met over the weekend, and even on the, you know, I gave her some of the specialty chocolate that I make to take with her on her drive back to Maryland, and she said to me, I know to put only a certain amount of it in the passenger seat where I can reach, because if not, I'll eat the whole thing. And that is one of the techniques that her and I have worked on together, to not, you know, eat so much food mindlessly in certain environments. I mean, first it's to surround yourself with high quality food, but then just make sure that it's not like right there, always accessible. And you can take a second to take a breath or maybe think about something positive or change the radio station instead of just reaching for a mouthful of something that may just be feeding a negative pattern for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And tune into what that emotion is or what that thought is that's driving you to grab for the food. So are you thinking of every day, or are you worried about the next moment or the future or somebody's coming home tonight or whatever, you know, can be going on in our emotional and mental state, can always drive us to make one a good choice or a bad choice. And that's pretty much what makes up over days and days and days, the framework of our behavior patterns. And that's affecting our health constantly, affecting our food choices constantly. So, I mean, a simple thing you can do is to not buy the foods that you are addicted to and just not bring them home. But, and then also, of course, add better quality versions, like James said, and but also this realization of what's motivating you to choose the foods that you're choosing is extremely important. That's a part of behavior change that is integral. We can't make changes in our lifestyle or in our diet just by reading a book or just by following a pre-prescribed diet that somebody tells us, even if it's the paleo diet or the vegan diet or the pagan diet, which I really want to ask you about the pagan diet. But we can't just read a book, and even if we're inspired by that book's teachings, we can't just follow or expect ourselves to be able to follow that book for any longer than, you know, weeks or months. Because really what's driving us to make the decisions that we're making, if we're doing it in a way that follows our own consciousness and our own level of health, is for that information and what we're choosing to reflect back on ourselves and for us to be responsible for the choices that we're making ourselves. And so that really is the missing piece of why diet setting don't work, ultimately, is because it doesn't involve the person who's eating enough, you know, doesn't ask enough of them. Do you know about the pagan diet?
I don't. I'm interested. Talk to me.
So I mentioned Mark Hyman a couple of times. I actually really like to kind of beat up on him a little bit. But he's a very successful functional medical doctor. He's a TED Turner or TED Talk spokesperson. And he decided that he was going to combine the paleo and the vegan diet to get the best of both worlds. And so he's got this new, very confusing book called The Pagan Diet. And it's very market friendly. Like, it's very marketable. And the images associated with it are two brains, two heads, and one's made out of a collard leaf, with primarily a collard leaf in the shape of a two-dimensional head and face at a profile. So two faces facing off. And he calls that one the vegan diet, even though there's a quarter of it that's a steak. So it's like 75% collard and quarter steak, and then there's a plus. And then there's another face looking at it, and it's 75% steak and 25% collard steak. And so his concept, I think, is merging the best of both diets, the pagan diet and the vegan diet. And he says, the principle is being 75% of your diet vegetarian. But really, if you look at that image, it's 50% meat, 50% green. So anyway, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm also familiar with Dr. Hyman. I attended the Institute for Integrative Nutrition in 2009, and he was one of the speakers. And I found he was great. He had good energy and exciting. I don't generally subscribe when people tell me they have percentages or certain diets are going to work for me. I do like the idea that he's trying to fuse two things that seem to already be working for a specific population of people, because there's even more to be learned from how they both work together. I would be weary of any information that tells you this is what works, or like, we found the cure, or this is better. I'm not here to tell anybody what to eat. I eat what I eat because it feels good for my body, and if it didn't, I would change it. There are certain philosophical differences that people can have, whether it's animal rights or it's, you know, my body is going to fall apart and I can't lift weight if I don't eat meat. I believe in all of those. If it works for you, just like if broccoli works for you, if that belief system works for you, go for it. But I do think there are benefits for specific people for anything. I think there are ways of eating meat and being healthy. I think there are ways of eating completely animal product free and still being supremely healthy. One right now in our society takes a little bit more work, is harder to do, and is probably more expensive. And the other one just seems a little bit more like in your face, on your plate. And over time, being open to change and shifting what you eat based on how you feel, basically kind of rooting out the stubbornness, is very important if you want to have sustained health. Did that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I mean, I also agree with you absolutely, because the individual diet, so to speak, if you want to say that, or for the process of people finding out and determining for themselves what food is best for them and what they have to really leave alone, is not based on any set of guidelines that anybody has pre-prescribed. It is just that. It's a figuring out process. And, you know, our own ethics can drive us to make decisions. I mean, we can get into an activist, you know, become a member of an activist group or befriend vegans, or we can make any decision because of social circumstances or because of ethical circumstances. But some vegans are still not healthy, and it's very difficult to be a healthy vegan for many people. And whereas, you know, eating the meat diet is the lazy way to eat, and especially because it's so attached to mindless eating, and not just meat, but all the processed food that's in our environment. And I'm not sure which one's really more expensive ultimately. I mean, I actually do kind of tend to think that the lazy way to eat is the more expensive because it's such long illness, and then they have to pay it in their hospital bills. But, you know, this is kind of like the prevention versus the end of care, where the sick care or health care resources get spent. So it goes into that kind of question. But, no, I totally agree with you. And I think that also people become so attached to their ideology to justify what they are doing, how they are eating, that it's somehow off-putting or isolating for other people to try to try new diets. And so I really appreciate the fact that you're a non-judgmental vegan.
I'm actually wearing a T-shirt that says I'm a non-judgmental vegan. No, but I shouldn't make that shirt.
You're wearing a faux fur hat.
It's true. It was a gift. I'm very, very gracious. I would say that any place, this is such a larger scale statement, any place where there is attachment to anything, it's not necessarily healthy. Mm-hmm. It's a place to look. If you're finding blockage in your life, I worked with a great meditation teacher for many years. He actually brought me to know Monty, and so vicariously, this is why I'm meeting you right now. He was very key in teaching me about attachment. Like, if you are in a situation, it's not going well, just look at what you really refuse to let go of, where you have to be, where you're more interested in being right than getting it right. And in our diets, when it's that way, it's a real sign. You know, if I refuse to be open to the idea of eating meat, that would just be developing some sort of attachment in me where I was creating a little, like, village for myself, only for me, and no other information was allowed in. I'm not smart enough. I'm not wise enough. I'm not whole enough without other people, without other ideas, to really live a healthy life. And I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, well, that is amazing, thought-provoking. This is Dr. Millie. This is Eating for Meaning, and I am having the pleasure of interviewing James Ray. He's a raw vegan chef located right here in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, but available for travel as well. And James, if you'd like to reach him, his website is www.chefjamesray.com. So Chef James Ray, R-A-Y. .com. And we are talking today about, really we're talking about, I think, the process a person needs to go through in order to authentically make nutritional and health changes for themselves. And that can be a very difficult process, especially if you're a person who is suffering from a lot of health issues. And the reason that I decided to call the show today, The Chef Who Healed Himself, is because James Ray is a wonderful example of a person who did struggle through that process and has come out with an entire career, and a successful one. And if you were to meet him, and I think you can probably hear the radio as well, he really knows what he's talking about. And so we'll continue this interview when we come back after the break. This is Dr. Millie for Eating for Meaning.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back. This is Dr. Millie. I'm the host of Eating for Meaning here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you like what you're hearing, please do follow along to the show, and you will receive weekly notices what the show's topic is and who the special guest of the day is. And sometimes it's just me running my mouth for an hour and a half. And I want to thank you for tuning in. If you do have any questions for our guests, the phone number to call is 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. Today I am interviewing James Ray. He is a raw vegan chef located right here in the city of New York, New York. And we are broadcasting live from Mountain at 903 Franklin Avenue. One of my clinic homes, and also the home of Apothecary Kitchen. And I welcome you to come on down and check us out. Now, if you would like to get in touch with James, his website address is www.chefjamesray.com. And I was also checking out your Instagram, and you have some great photos and some recipes on there. What are you inspired by these days?
Oh, well, these days it's really chocolate. I love working with the most nutrient dense foods that I can find, and raw unprocessed cacao is not only really high in you can probably speak to this ORAC rating, but it also is a great delivery vehicle. Actually shamans through history have used it to carry medicine. And I do the same thing. I love to add certain things, superfood powders, things like, acai berry or medicinal mushroom extracts, and really work with those not as just medicine but also as flavors and find ways of bringing out the best parts of those flavors without adding, too much sweetener or anything that's rich or is processed.
Yeah, so cocoa is definitely a medicinal food. And when James is talking about the ORAC value, he's talking about the overall antioxidant value of cocoa, as well as some of these berries he talks about aside. So ORAC stands for oxygen radical absorbance capacity. And that basically means that these kind of high nutrients, these very nutrient-dense foods that have these plant chemicals, these phytochemicals in them, quench free radicals. So when oxygen damages our tissue, damages our cells, starts to promote DNA damage or even the beginning of cancer, it relies on these nutrients from plants in order to heal the cell again, in order to buffer that electron that's circulating and damaging the cell. And so foods high in the ORAC value are definitely those to include in our diet, and those are all the colors of the rainbow, essentially. But then the fact that cocoa is dark brown means it does have a lot of flavanols in it. It's got a lot of rich nutrients in it. The color is very meaningful. Cocoa also is a bitter food, and so it helps to detoxify the liver. It's a rich source of magnesium. It's calming for the nervous system. Do you use raw cocoa?
In the bars and the chocolates that I make, I do work just with the raw beans and grind them myself. That's not the only thing I use in my recipes, but currently, the question you asked, that's what I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. And so cocoa is also free of caffeine, but it has a few other chemicals in theobromines, which are circulatory stimulants, so they kind of have similar effects to caffeine. But really, if you look at the Hershey's brands and things like that, they're adding caffeine back to the chocolate. So probably the chocolate that you use does not have caffeine in it.
No, there's been nothing added. It's unadulterated. It's coming straight from farms. Currently from the Dominican Republic, the beets I'm working with.
Okay. So do you work with the farmers or the food providers? I know that you grow your own food in some cases.
The furthest that I've gone with growing my own food due to space limitation is actually sprouting and growing within the kitchens that I'm working in, whether it's wheatgrass or sunflower sprouts or actually sprouting some of the, sprouting quinoa is a monthly process, and then I dehydrate it. So I have sprouted quinoa on hand if I want to cook or work with it. And as far as the sourcing of the beans, a few friends have found me over the years. New York is a wonderful place for networking, who say things to me like, oh, I got a cacao guy in Guatemala, and they put me in touch. And, this person had a cacao farm, and he sent me over a certain amount of time, like 20 pounds of beans. And they were so unique and very fruity, and cacao can have a lot of different flavors to it. And but right now I'm working through a larger scale supplier called Ohio, which is a wonderful, they have superfoods and cacao. It's a great company, OJIO. I'd recommend checking them out. So right now that's how I'm working with it.
Okay, amazing. And sprouting is a great way for you to grow your own green vegetables in the wintertime. You can sprout virtually anything that has life to it, so as long as it's not a genetically modified seed. Or hasn't been irradiated, then you can essentially sprout it. And so, I have instructions for sprouting on my website at www.millysays.com. And I imagine that James teaches you all about how to do that on his website as well. Do you?
I actually do not, but
I think on your Instagram I saw something about sprouting.
The Instagram is very easy, just like my website. Hashtag Chef James Ray, RAY.
And so by engaging in these kinds of practices at home, sure, it takes a couple of days, but it's not actually that much legwork. It just involves putting some seeds or some lentils or some beans or some grains into some water and soaking, and you just need a mason jar and some cheesecloth, and you can do it, and you can feed your family, and you can feed yourself, and it's a very inexpensive way, actually, to get extremely fresh food with available nucleic acids, which heal the body and give you energy and are detoxifying and are pure sources of protein. And so these are the things that you can incorporate into your regime as you are choosing which foods to eliminate from your diet. And so let's get back to your story. So after you did away with meat and dairy, and you started noticing that your sinuses were clearing up and you were feeling better and more energy, then what did you do?
Well, ironically, at this point, I started working at Pizza Hut, and I was working as a pizza delivery driver. At this point, I wasn't eating any of the meat or the cheese. But I noticed there was an oven there that you just put something in it and it would run through in 6 minutes and then it pops out. So it was a great place to experiment. And I just started experimenting with different foods. And I ended up transferring to a different location. And for whatever reason, this was in Towson. I was going to Towson University, just outside of Baltimore City. And there were a large group of, like I say, kids my age who were into kind of the punk scene, and they were all vegans. And I was just, like, blown away. I was like, I know what I'm doing is different, and I'm okay with the changes one thing at a time, but that's crazy. Like, I had all these belief systems. Oh, you're not getting enough nutrition. You're not going to be, if you sleep at night, you feel stressed out. And basically, they inspired me to lean further in to this, not necessarily restrictive, but more open-minded to vegetable diet. And so that was really the next step, was stepping into like all of these meat replacements, which now I know aren't really coming from great companies like Morningstar Farms and things like this, but it really gave me like the bridge across this like chasm of a fear around what was I going to eat.
Right. So you're talking about like textured vegetable proteins and soy proteins and things like that, that are mock meats that pop up, soy burgers, veggie dogs, all these things, which I also not really consider those to be very healthy and are generally from genetically modified soybeans, and so are rich in pesticides, essentially, and endocrine disruptors. However, the process by which you went through all of this change is really amazing. And so you met up with these vegan punks, and did you go vegan then?
No. Anyone who's met me knows that if I'm confronted with something specific, I'm going to do something very close to it, but in my own unique Aquarian way. But I just thought more about it. I didn't want to eat any sort of meat products around these friends. And they didn't really care. They didn't judge me, but I just wanted to like see that was possible. And I just started to feel even better without, you know, because then that involved poultry and seafood was kind of the last leg in becoming vegan, really. Eggs hung on for a long time. They kept me outside of the vegan description. But within about a year, I had become someone who would define myself as vegan.
And then you also mentioned about kind of introducing or starting to eat vegetables. So during your childhood or upbringing, you weren't a person who was eating a lot of veggies?
I would be the kid at the table until midnight. And my parents would say, you have to eat your vegetables. And I just wouldn't. And the vegetables I was being presented with were canned and not even frozen. Just it was a diet that was designed to save as much money as possible. I describe it as a poverty diet. So a lot of canned food and, you know, frozen meats. And so even if I was exposed to something like broccoli, it would have been frozen and then overcooked, and it just would not have tasted very good. And even produce, there were red delicious apples, which were extremely waxy and black flavor, or there were oranges that were kind of sad and out of season.
Mm-hmm.
So around this time, I was just being exposed to, I had a peach for the first time. So, oh my God, these things, like when did they start growing these things? This is amazing. You know, I had like tropical fruit that wasn't out of a can. Like I had pineapple or I had mango. It was kind of one thing after another. I had a girlfriend at the time who fed me a dried fig, and I freaked out. I said, "What was that thing? It is so chewy. It is delicious. It's like, do they candy that thing?" She said, "No, it's a fig, James. It's just really that good." And that just really spurred my exploration. I wanted to try everything.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're really food illiterate.
Yeah.
It's amazing. This is not only James Ray, the chef who killed himself, but this is went from food illiterate to really a food expert. And so just by paying attention to your own body's responses, but also exposing yourself to different people and being open-minded about who you're eating and obviously having an internal drive to go forward on this journey with yourself. What do you think was driving you at this point? Like, was your body healed at this point, or were you still kind of going through illness?
I still had bouts of reflux, and I still had consistent bloating and uncomfortability in the lower part of my intestine. But it felt better. It felt like things were moving. And this is just around the time where I realized, where I kind of bumped into the idea of raw food. So I was just kind of bubbling with excitement. Things were leaving me. Picture this, a male in kind of urban inner city environment throughout his life without the ability to like kind of move freely in his body and restricted becomes kind of opened. I was pretty, my mother didn't think I was the friendliest person at this time. I had kind of an ego explosion. My body looked better. It felt better. I had more energy. I was kind of a showman at this time. So I think I was just spurred by joy for the first time. I just felt really good. My body felt good.
Okay, so you were a bit, you're experiencing like an ego and you had some swag or something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's good. The making of a superstar. Okay. So, and so then you discovered raw food. What was that experience?
I've never been one who really likes cold weather as I sit here in Brooklyn and it's cold weather.
Degrees today. I think it's like a high of the week.
But when it was January and I had time off from work, and I said to my partner at the time, let's just drive south until it's warm. Let's take a road trip. I figured I would have to at least get to Florida, but we went to Georgia. We got as far as Georgia, and we're staying with a friend of a friend. I was just scouring the internet, because there were no smartphones at that time, for a health food store, and I found one. And we went to this place outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and there was a book there that I came across. I was going there to get like goji berries or something, which someone had already taught me about. But there was this book called Enzyme Nutrition, which is like an apple on the front. It looked as outdated. It just looked like it was from another time. But I just knew I had to have it. I think it was $3. And I bought that book. And during this vacation, whenever I had free time, I just read this book. And it was basically walking me through the science of why raw food is beneficial to extended lifespan and more energy. It was very scientific, and it really spoke to the way that my mind worked at that time.
Okay, yeah, I've read that book. Enzyme pioneer Dr. Edward Howell wrote that book, Enzyme Nutrition. Not sure what year. But so that kicked it all off, and were you cooking at that time?
I was. I actually began cooking at the time when I, around 19, when I stopped eating red meat. In the environment that I was in Baltimore City and within my family, the food that I was looking for, higher quality, just wasn't available. The only way to get it was to prepare it for myself. And I had always been around cooking. And my mother is a magnificent cook and also a baker. She makes the best baked goods I've ever had in my life. And so I kind of have it in my blood and in my bones, is what she says. And so I just kind of started, and it felt like a science experiment and an art studio at the same time.
Right. So that's cool. That's awesome. That's how it should be, because you're experimenting with flavors. And are you fully self-taught?
Yes, I am.
Wow. And so when did you start cooking? Do you remember what dishes you started cooking at the beginning?
My mind said, I want to replace what I'm taking out in red meat. So I started working with tofu, and I really liked eating Chinese food at that time. So I tried to make like Szechuan tofu with, I think the vegetables I used then were just onions and carrots. And it was a lot of burnt soy sauce smell in the house and bland, flavorless tofu that I would eat way too much of and get an awful stomach ache. It's one of the least desirable things to eat too much of. And then from there, I was baking. I made a cornbread recipe. I remember getting cans of creamed corn because it was some recipe I found where that was in it. And then like adding a little bit of honey to it and like jalapenos to it. It was all fun. And everyone is always like my food, whether I have or not. You know, you're your own worst critic.
And so, and you we, you did mention before when the show started about how you always put love in your cooking. So tastes good.
There's definitely love, and there's something else that is extra. There's extra of it in the raw food and raw desserts that I make. It's an energy. Basically, you need less of the food to get moving. There's a lot of energy in the food that I make. Some people call it prana. But I get a lot of comments, especially among communities that are sensitive to those types of things.
Okay. So, and this is something that I really like teaching, too, is are you generating energy from the food that you are eating, or are you feeling fatigued and tired every time you finish a meal? And so obviously food is calories, food is nutrients, food is energy, as James said. And you should be generating energy every time you eat. If you are sluggish and fatigued and feel overstuffed but tired, like you have to have a nap after you eat your lunch, this is a sign that the food that you're eating is not for you. And the fact that we're talking about a process that's taken this chef, this guy here, James Ray, 20 years to go from being somebody who's sick and unhealthy and the diet's not working for him at all to all of a sudden it's dawning on him that this is the thing that he better try to change his diet and take him through all of these different categories of experimentation into the cooking realm. It's not that all of you out there need to become a chef, but to become a cook is a way, and to start cooking for yourself and your family really is an integral way to start, or hire somebody like James, is an integral way to start bringing the nutrition and the energy into your diet, because this is the only way that you really know what you're eating, that you really have hands on your food, and that you can really experience the joy and the pleasure in it from the beginning to from the preparation or from the shopping and preparation or from the going and preparation to the cooking and the eating. And I feel like I had another point that I wanted to make as well, but this is amazing stuff. Today I'm interviewing. This is Eating for Meaning and on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Dr. Millie. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm a certified nutrition specialist, and every week we talk about the different principles of eating for meaning. And what those principles are is that they are nutrition is the most important aspect of food, and what I condone and what I like to celebrate is that not everybody should be eating the same diet, different diet. We all need to find our own unique safe list and not so safe list, and we also need to infuse and inject some joy into our cooking, and that is the second principle of eating for meaning, to have adventure and look at your, instead of going into a routine and suffering from your routine, look at your food and your diet as something to have fun with, and so that you're looking at always incorporating more nutrition, more energy, and more of the good feelings into eating. Only by doing this can we crowd out the bad thoughts and the bad associations we have. Now, we've already talked today about challenging attachments to food and looking at how our body and how our mind gets attached to eating the wrong foods or eating foods at the wrong time or binging. And so we do have to have mindfulness when it comes to eating. We do want to pay attention to the effect of the food has on our body, as well as the relationship the food and the production and the manufacturing of the food has on the environment, has on the ecology. Is it helping our planet or is it not? And so we can think about these things when we're choosing which foods to eat. And the fact that the fourth principle of eating for meaning is epigenetic. And this is the fact that our DNA actually can change based on which nutrients we include in our diet. And the higher nutrients, foods with a higher ORAC scale, for instance, a higher antioxidant value, are foods that help to turn over healthy cells. And we're going to discuss more. So I'm going to go to a break. Join me back on Eating for Meaning. I'm interviewing vegan chef James Ray from New York, New York, on his health condition, his inspirations, how he overcame his health condition, and hopefully we'll be getting into some cooking secrets when we get into the last segment of Eating for Meaning.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on spiritualsingles.com. That's spiritualsingles.com.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
And welcome back to the show. This is Eating for Meaning, and I am your host, Dr. Millie. And I'm having a great time today with my new friend, my new BFF, James Ray. He is a raw vegan chef who really embodies the whole experience and process of his profession because he heals himself. And we are interviewing him on his how he overcame his digestive health problems and his sinus health problems and his junk food addiction and also a lot of negative feelings that he had about food. And so this, hopefully you've been tuning in and really getting a lot of teaching moments or learning moments from this show, because there's been a lot of light bulbs going off in my own brain as well. And one thing that I did want to bring up actually from the last segment that James was talking about was, just because you were raised on a food that you don't like when the way it's prepared does not mean you don't like that food. And so people develop negative associations with maybe the, you know, peas, because they're always said canned peas, and they hate canned peas. And so therefore they think they don't like peas, and then they'll never try peas again. And so a great part about cooking and trying things again is that, just as if you were 4 years old and you have to reintroduce broccoli to your four-year-old, and then if she didn't like it when she was four, then maybe she'll like it when she's five. You have to do that with yourself as well, with new foods, and this is how we vary our diet and get new ingredients. And if it is indeed possible to get all of our nutrition from food, then we better be eating a varied diet and also adding medicine into our food as we cook it. And this is something that I do want to talk to James about, is his cooking secrets, how he likes to prepare food, and medicine in food. So what are the healing qualities? We've talked about prana already, energy. Of course, that's healing. That's chi. That's life. That's source. What else?
Well, I kind of felt like you were going to give me a more specific question.
Okay, I will. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are your favorite cooking techniques?
I'm totally going to go outside the box with this answer. I would say fermentation. I find that more and more I'm realizing that cooking doesn't have to be about heat. When people say raw food, you know, is uncooked, if I don't know if cooking literally means to, does it mean to apply heat?
I guess it does, but cuisine doesn't.
But
cuisining.
When you prepare foods in any way, the more kind of respect you can give to them, and the more you can foster their ability to grow themselves, it just creates magical foods. My favorite foods in the world are fermented, whether it's like kimchi or something like ume plum vinegar, or just, you know, naturally occurring like apple cider vinegar. These are just beautiful things. And I realized that lactofermentation is really easy. You can do it in your own kitchen, in your own home, and it's really simple. The ingredients are simple. And if anyone has, anyone that's listening has children, like we were talking about sprouting in the last segment, sprout with your kids. They'll love it. They just will, oh my God, it's growing. Like, I don't know what that is. It's alive. And it's like, yeah, and you can eat it. And and that really is one of the most easy ways to get nutrient-dense foods into your body.
Yeah, absolutely. And fermentation was actually the answer that I was hoping you were going to give me, because that is, you talked, before the show began, you were talking about how you are a food alchemist. And it's amazing that the properties that food takes on when we can change them in these ways. I mean, in our mainstream society, people are changing the chemical structure of food by using dangerous practices like microwaving. Or our government is applying radiation to our food every time it leaves California. Or the concepts of food safety and food handling, using chemicals to sterilize our food, or pasteurization to remove all bacterial life from our food, are really the kind of sick ways to handle. I mean, I'm not going to say that we should stop doing all those things right now, because obviously that does not work within the way the food system is right now in the United States. However, by working in our kitchens on a small scale in order to change the mechanics and the biology and the properties of food, we can really infuse and create medicines. Yeah. Apple cider vinegar is one of my favorite things, and there's a whole book written on the 1,001 uses of apple cider vinegar, and it's both acidic and it's alkalizing to the body. It'll kill your warts and also heal your acid reflux if you have too little acid. And so, how do you make kimchi?
The kimchi that I make, my favorite recipe involves Napa cabbage, which is the longer, kind of watery cabbage, carrots, daikon radish, and I add some burdock root to mine to give it a grounding element. I'm shredding the cabbage by hand and using a shredding disc in the Cuisinart. To shred the daikon and the carrot. I add some pink salt. I really recommend working with a really high-quality salt. Salt is so important in cooking, but also just in your life. Just spend the extra few dollars. It's really worth the money. And then you create a paste. I'm using Korean chili powder that I'm actually getting from my friend Annie, who's grew up on the West Coast, and her mother grows these peppers, dries them and powders them and gets them to me, which is a beautiful thing. So I'm adding the chili powder, fresh ginger, scallions, garlic, and a little bit more salt, and creating a paste out of that. And then I'm massaging that with very clean hands, because this will be fermenting in closed containers, massaging all of that into the cabbage and vegetable mixture. I'm giving it a lot of pressure to break it down a little bit, which just gives it a kickstart. So instead of taking, you know, a month, it can take about 14 days before it's ready to even, you know, to taste. And then I am forcefully pressing that into kind of valve-top jars. I forget the name for it. It's kind of a rubber stopper that goes in between the closing of the glass. That's very important because the pressure will build as the CO2 gets released from the lactic fermentation. I'm packing that and keeping it out of direct sunlight for anywhere from, like I said, 2 weeks to up to 6-7 months.
Amazing. And so just even listening to the steps and the care and the quality of the ingredients and the attachments to people, the kind of the bond that goes into making all of this and the resources that go into making this food is so special. Like, how could that food not be absolutely delicious and so nutritious for you? And to start thinking about food in these terms and start thinking, and you don't have to become a slow cook chef, but to experiment and to try to eat these foods and to realize the effects of these foods have on your energy and have on your overall health is a great experiment and a way to start including them, these new foods, into your diet. And what do you say? I have a question actually. So is lactose fermentation vegan?
Yes, I'm not adding any sort of starter. the bacteria necessary. Well, I'm in that example, I'm working with cabbage and also daikon, and also actually all four of those vegetables have enough bacteria living in them started. Yeah, so that is vegan. Some people use a whey starter.
Yeah, that's what I always think of when I think of lacto-fermentation. I always thought it was a whey starter, but it doesn't have to be. It just has to be the salt and the vegetable.
Mm-hmm. The salt pulls out the liquid, and the liquid starts to grow and feed off the sugars, and the naturally occurring, basically, food that it eats in the liquid medium.
And so for those of you who are, tuned into the microbiome and what's going on in our digestive tracts and how there are trillions and trillions of healthy microbe colonizers, and what I mean by this is there's bacteria that exist in your intestines that create 85% of your immune system and allow your stool to form and kill off bad bacteria and viruses and yeast. And this is a normal micro colony that is existing in your intestines. And the way that food, our food supply, and the overprescription of antibiotics has been going on for decades has really starved our intestines and robbed our intestines of these good, healthy bacteria. And so adding these fermented foods that James is describing, kimchi, for instance, which is a, if you didn't figure it out, a spicy Korean cabbage, almost like a spicy sauerkraut. And sauerkraut would be another example, and beet borscht and apple cider vinegar, and we've mentioned kombucha before, fermented tea. And so eating these foods that do have natural occurring and healthy bacteria in them do the opposite of what mainstream food production, these large-scale manufacturing plants are doing by killing all the bacteria and making sure everything's ultra-pasteurized and make sure everything's sterile, and we really don't want our food to be sterile. It's really bad for us. It might be good in terms of preventing listeria outbreaks in meat plants, but I mean, we don't want our food to be sterile. We want our food to have good bacteria, and these are ways to really use food as medicine in order to recolonize. And yogurt, of course, for if you're using dairy or kefir, would be another. Miso, we mentioned several of them. Tempeh, these are all healthy ferments. Not everybody can tolerate fermented food, however. If you have a histamine problem, you can't tolerate it. So you can talk to me about that. But otherwise, this is a wonderful medicinal classification of food. And so fermented, sprouted, what other methods do you use?
I like to, it's another kind of unusual one. I like to massage things. I mean, specifically, this is very popular, but like a kale salad. When you, I'm not going to remember the specifics on this, but I do know that within kale, and this might be true in other leafy cruciferous vegetables, there's a compound there's something that is inside the cell that if it is heated, it breaks down and it's destroyed.
Mm-hmm. But it's a goitrogen.
So if the cells are kind of broken down first with your hands, it creates another compound that is actually more heat stable, but also it's more bioavailable. First of all, I love to keep the raw nature of foods intact to a degree. Kale is a wonderful one. But just making sauces and massaging them into kale is a wonderful thing, and then adding chopped, daikon or carrot for a texture, and maybe a seed or a nut for a different textural contrast, maybe something like shredded apple for another flavor contrast. I think a partner of mine told me that I'm always creating the umami flavor, and at that point I said, I don't know what that is. But she said, well, you're doing it, and it's just kind of like the all-encompassing kind of what is that flavor like. Maybe you can speak to that more than I can.
Yeah, so that's also an extremely interesting health topic, the fact that the flavors that we're eating are not just a determinant of do not just speak to our preference of food. Now, obviously, here in this culture, we prefer sweet, and we prefer sweet, and we prefer salt, and those over-dominate. But then there's these other flavors, bitter, sour, umami,
and bland, some people regard bland as a flavor, which are also not only good flavors to balance out our palate, but also represent nutrition. And so flavors actually represent nutrition and nutritious aspects and how they affect different organs of the body. Umami is kind of actually a meat, mineral, mushroom flavor. So it's described in different ways. And so it's very interesting actually, because what this speaks to me is, first of all, that you are creating warmth in a food, even if it's raw, by generating an umami flavor. So it becomes more balanced than just having fully cool, like a fresh salad, which is cold and maybe too detoxifying for people in New York or something. Whereas if you create this umami flavor with your vegetables, then you're having the coolness of the vegetables, but then you're also having this kind of meaty, warm nature that's wrapped up in the flavor. And then also, I think that probably just provides a balance for like other flavors to also be brought out. So that's very cool. That's the umami flavor. It's kind of like a meat flavor, and so you can do that with raw and vegan dishes.
Well, I would say yes, definitely. I'm always looking for balance in food. But to give you an actual cooking method, I really like roasting things, especially during the winter. I mean, I'm part of the Park Slope Food Cooperative, and a lot of the vegetables that are coming in are from, Hepworth Farm or even closer, which are just local vegetables available. It's like a farmer's market every day. And specifically roasting root vegetables, and then applying some sort of dressing to that. The simplest I can think of, which if you can grab these ingredients, you should really try making, is dicing beets, tossing them with a little bit of coconut oil, salt and pepper, roasting those at 375, depending on the size. You'll have to roast them anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes. When those are done, tossing them with a little bit of Bume plum vinegar. If you're not familiar with this, this is, I believe, a traditionally Japanese ingredient.
Acrobat.
It's lovely. It's also full of probiotics, so there's no need to cook it. Toss it with that and also some toasted pecans, crushed toasted pecans, and that makes it really, I could eat that all day. It's a delicious dish by itself, but you could also toss that over some arugula.
That sounds amazing. I'm going to try that tonight. After I'm on Terra Marie Live. Those of you who are interested in satellite radio, Sirius XM, I'll be on channel 154 tonight on Terra Marie Live. We will be discussing obesogens and all the chemical endocrine disruptors that resemble estrogen in our environment and how that creates adiposopathy, which is a creation of toxic fat in our cells. And if you are having a hard time losing weight, if you are having a hard time lowering your cholesterol, even if you are not overweight, then it could have to do with these chemical compounds that you are both ingesting as well as exposing yourself to in your home, even contained within household items. So tune in tonight on Terra Marie Live, or check it out on my website at www.milliesays.com. I want to thank you all for tuning in today. This has been a super exciting and complex as well as heartwarming episode of Eating for Meaning. I want to thank my very special guest, vegan chef James Ray. If you would like to check out James online, his website is www.chefjamesray.com. That's R-A-Y, chefjamesray.com. Or and what? Tell me about your services. What services do you provide?
I offer catering services for larger events. I have a team that I can assemble at any moment, sort of like the Power Rangers of food. I can do in-home cooking services where I would shop, prepare your kitchen, and cook for you. There would be meals that you could eat when you're there, but also when I'm not, there would be easy to reheat meals there for you. But also I do chocolate and specialty items that I make in my kitchen. And if you go to my website and through the chocolate page and send an email to me, I can send you a description on how I can get those foods to you, where I'll be vending them, where I'll be selling them.
Amazing. And so how far is your reach? Because I know you're in Brooklyn, you're in Manhattan.
Well, I do deliveries in Manhattan, not above the park, so basically south of Central Park. And in Brooklyn, just reach out to me about that. I'm based in beautiful Crown Heights, just near the Brooklyn Museum, so I'm pretty central to Brooklyn.
Okay, amazing. And so we've got about 4 minutes left. Is there anything else that you wanted to say, any message to people who, you know, were tuning in and want to hear more from you, or any last tidbits?
Well, I'll speak to anyone who's listening, possibly live right now. This has been a very cold winter, and also a little bit challenging. The elements have been stronger than usual. In terms of what you're eating, I would really recommend taking it slow. If your meals right now aren't helping you to slow down and get centered and get warm again, then they might not be serving you as well as they could. Really take some time for yourself. I've just been noticing the city really getting hit so hard, and we're such survivors here that there can be a mentality to keep pushing. Your body wants to be ready for spring. It doesn't just want to make it there. Spring is a time where you can really express yourself and do what you need to do. So if that involves eating some more warm soup, or that involves taking a bath or canceling one of the thousands of nightly events that we're all doing, do that for yourself. And if you just have questions for me and want to reach out, if what I said, you know, touches anyone, just feel free to go to the website and contact me. Just as easy to remember, chefjamesray@gmail.com, and that's spelled R-A-Y.
Amazing. I love that advice. So, winter is a time for hibernation, and even if we're not a bear, we'll still be hibernating to some extent, because it's time to grow a little extra body fat, right?
Yes, please. I will take it.
James has that. James has 4% body fat. I don't have that much either, but I want to thank you so much, James. You are a true kindred spirit of mine. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and have you on the show. And please do be in touch with Chef James Ray. We are going to be working together. We are planning events already together, so not only on the radio, but actual live cooking and nutrition events. We're planning one at Flavor Town coming up in May or June or something like that. So stay tuned to probably both of our websites for that information. And coming up, you're not going to want to miss shows coming up. You absolutely want to follow along, because I've got a very interesting Pennsylvania farmer coming up in a couple of weeks who is going to be talking about his efforts to get raw milk to you across the border and into New York, and also how he's setting up a wellness station at his farmer's market. And I have been there. It's north of Pittsburgh. So Ron Eichner from Eichner's Farmer's Market is going to be joining me on May 12th. Yes, next week, May 5th, yet to be announced. But again, I want to thank so much to James Ray. He's a vegan chef here in New York. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. This is Dr. Millie, host of Eating for Meaning. Take my advice and feel better.